Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
With our brother from South Africa, Jan Lamprecht. Hello, Jan.
Hi there, Georgi.
And from our, again, Patrick from US OIVE. Hello, Patrick.
Hey.
So, a lot of topics will be discussed today, like always. Generally, we will talk about the situation in the world today, what is going on. We are from three different continents, so we can look from three different perspectives. So first, Jan, what do you think, what is going on in South Africa, and what do you think about the Jufu pandemic?
Okay. The COVID in South Africa, I've also been switching off with these things because you can only take so much of it. And the fact is, it's just like I was saying to people a year ago, you know, you're hearing a lot of screaming about it, but nobody's going to die. Well, hardly anyone dies. I personally only know through a friend of one person who's died in the last year, and that's an old person in Pretoria. Other than that, I don't know of anybody who's died, and I only know one person who's even had COVID. So other than that, you know, there's nobody's had it, nobody's died, or hardly anyone's died, hardly anyone's had it. So, you know, why are we hearing all this weird shit? To me, COVID is very creepy. It's like a fucking psyop. And I ask myself, what is the purpose of all this? And they're running around and they're screeching a lot about vaccines. Now they're going to vaccinate people in South Africa. But luckily, we have choices. And I most definitely will never want to be vaccinated. I'm staying the fuck away from the vaccinations. I've seen some videos where they've been talking about the fact that you're going to, it's not a vaccine because it doesn't prevent you from getting it. That apparently the definition of a vaccine and the definition of a COVID vaccine are not the same. That COVID the COVID vaccine isn't a vaccine. It's actually DNA therapy. They're changing your DNA and you don't know what's going to happen. And the one thing that I have come across that does sound a little bit scary about this so-called vaccine is they say that this mRNA, like, overstimulates your immune response. And in other words, it makes your immune system over-respond to the apparent threat. And I saw where a woman who was a doctor or a scientist or a former professor, she said that when they did tests like when they did tests with this kind of approach in animals, that they found that I think after a year, the animals died from their immune system going crazy. So the whole thing to me is like there's lots of unknowns, lots of weirdness, and you don't know what the fuck you're putting into your body. So me, I'm very wary of the thing. But apparently in South Africa, the blacks are much more keen to get the vaccines than the whites. That's what I've picked up from the media. So the blacks totally believe, the blacks, I think the blacks largely believe in COVID. Not all blacks do, but they largely do believe in COVID and they take it very seriously. And so when the government changes the rules, then you've got to go by those rules, the lockdowns and the things. But on the whole, you know, did it kill many people? Well, I've been kind of hoping it would kill a lot of people, but as you realize. But the reality is they did say, and this ties back to what you'd predicted a long time ago when you did your COVID study for us, was that South Africa last year in the winter didn't have a flu season.
Yeah.
For the first time ever, no flu season in South Africa. Now, how the fuck did that happen? Well, it's because it obviously shows yet again that, you know, what was used to be called flu is now called COVID. And also We do have, they did seal borders and things like that. Now we're in a like a lockdown level one or something, and it's not that bad. And we only have a curfew from midnight until 4 a.m. in the morning. That's the only time you're not allowed to go out. Otherwise, you're okay. The only thing I hate is that you must wear the mask in public at all times. You can go to jail for 6 months if you don't. The other thing that's even creepier, hey, is that you have to wear a mask if you're driving a car. Even if you're alone, you have to wear a mask. And they have cops and they've pulled people off the road. So I sort of have a mask like half on so that if the cops are nearby and I see them, then I quickly pull it up and so forth. But they're very strict on the fucking mask shit. But I try to wear it in ways that it doesn't impede me and so on. So I sort of function okay. But the mask thing is taken very seriously. I've seen some strange things. But all in all, it's much ado about nothing. Of course, it's created massive damage to the South African economy. We've had lots of people lose jobs. I've even heard that businesses have gone under. I've even heard of people, whites, losing their houses. So it has impacted people. But it's not impacted everybody, but it's the place has taken a beating. About the only good thing that's come out of it is that internet companies have benefited from it, and lots of people are working from home. And that's as much as I can say about COVID. Otherwise, I don't really take anything the government says seriously. I don't even listen. I don't care. I just want to know when is it illegal not to go somewhere. But other than that, it's not too bad. They don't limit us in terms of distance. I was talking to Bryza a week ago in Ireland, and he said they are limited in the distance they can drive or go from home. We don't have that limitation. It's just that you've got to wear this fucking mask everywhere. And there are some places where, like at one doctor's place where there's a pharmacy that I go to, when you go there, you've got to fill in a form. You've got to fill in a full form. Put in your ID number, your name, your telephone number, your address. They ask you questions. Have you lost your sense of taste? Do you have fever? You blah, blah, blah. And then they take your temperature and you've got to sign that form. You cannot walk into that building without filling in those details, having your temperature taken, and the form being signed. And of course, everywhere you go, you've got to do this sanitizing shit. Most places, they just ask you to do the sanitizer and they let you in. But there are some places like this medical place where they force you to fill in a form. When I went to court also, same procedure, got to fill in a form, get your temperature taken, blah, blah, blah. Everybody stands there filling in forms. Honest to God, I think these things are a waste of time and a waste of money. But to me, it's a load of crap. But anyway, the bottom line is the country is in trouble. And also, the country is borrowing money. The government's borrowing money and borrowing more money. And we've got so many people, especially black people, on social, getting social benefits from the government. The government is like spending money like there's no tomorrow, but its income has dropped a lot. Income tax has dropped a lot, etc. So as far as I'm concerned, the collapse of South Africa has just been speeded up by COVID. COVID's probably making it happen 10 years earlier than it would have done. But I must tell you something else that's really funny, that has been really exciting me, is I started discovering a couple of months ago that in the neighboring state of Mozambique, which used to be a Portuguese colony on the east coast of southern Africa, and by the way, it's run by communists, black communists, all these commies from the time of the Warsaw Pact. And South Africa is the same thing. All these governments in southern Africa, all of them are communist. They were funded by the Russians, the Chinese, etc., and even got aid from the Warsaw Pact. Now, the communists of Mozambique are known as Frelimo. That's their political party. And several months ago, I began to come across reports that there is Muslim activity in the north of Mozambique. And these Muslims are actually like terrorists in the area. And they seem to be blacks. They seem to be blacks who've converted to Islam. And they are linked to ISIS. And these blacks were fighting a little bit against the government. And they've been grabbing some rural areas. And they chased away almost well over 500,000 black people have fled from that area, from this tiny little terrorist army of Muslim terrorists. Anyway, last week it got really exciting. This terrorist army, in total in this little war that's been going on in Mozambique, about 2,600 people have been killed. But like I say, 500,000 have fled. And these Muslims are holding their own, and these black communist governments are actually struggling to even fight these handful of black terrorists, Muslim terrorists. Anyway, last week, they attacked a town of 75,000 people called La Palma in the north of Mozambique. They attacked this town, and they actually seem to still have control of this town. They also beheaded a bunch of people as well while they were at it. And they apparently have got much better weaponry than they had last time. So they've been getting funding. And now the government has said that they're going to have to try and send the army in to try and see if they can recapture the place. And all of Southern Africa, even South Africa, is like watching the situation. But South Africa is very careful not to get involved. And I want to tell you why. Because if our army had to get involved, our army might come off second best. They won't do that well. And our army has done peacekeeping in other parts of Africa where sometimes it's gone very wrong. So I absolutely enjoy watching these black governments, all of them communists, all of them are former enemies, and now they've got new enemies. And whoever saw this coming, that they'd be sitting with Muslim terrorists that they got to deal with. Now, ironically, in the north of Mozambique, the only people who are actually able to fight these Muslim terrorists is the Mozambique government went and hired some old Rhodesians and South Africans. And they got them some helicopters, and they're using civilian helicopters. Eh? These aren't fancy helicopters. These aren't like Apaches or anything like that. These are just straight off civilian helicopters. And so these old white guys with some AK-47s and some machine guns flying around in these helicopters, they are the ones who are most effective at fighting and killing these Muslim terrorists, can you believe? I got a little bit of film footage of some of it. And the whole topic of white men winning wars for black countries, that's a whole other topic we must talk about at some point. But here it is. A handful of whites defending these black commies, and I actually hate it when the white mercenaries do this, because they're not fighting for something that is for us. But anyway, be that as it may, these white guys are the only effective force there is, and it's not even many of them. You're talking like 20 or 30 guys, man. And But the government is now sitting, having lost the town. So it's very exciting. I'm really enjoying it. I'm glad to see the war is expanding. And I have heard that in the center of Africa, in the Congo, that there is also an ISIS group at work over there. And then, of course, in West Africa, there are Muslim terrorists fighting. And you've also got some kind of activity in East Africa, up in the north. Oh, I must tell you, these 9/11 is starting to backfire on Africa. You know, 9/11 to go and kill all the Muslims to make Israel happy has resulted in these Muslims now looking around, and these Muslims have seen, hey, you know, we can knock out black countries in Africa. And the Muslims have got black converts, and these converts are fighting with quite with quite a lot of intensity. So Africa's got its own homegrown terrorist problem now, and whites had no part in this. We had nothing to do with this. We didn't cause the problem, and I'm absolutely enjoying this. I can tell you that this tiny, tiny war could become a very serious matter in time. And I'm loving it. I'm loving it. Very exciting.
I will say something that it's... I understand your enthusiasm, but also the rising birth rates of Africa mixed with the Semitic fanatism of Islam are quite dangerous combination for the white race as a whole.
You mean that if the Muslims conquer the blacks, that then you'll have this huge continent of Muslims?
Yes.
I don't think it's going to be quite that easy, actually. Most of Africa is Christian, and France and America have said that they're going to are fighting against them. So I think that this is going to be... I don't see the Muslims actually conquering the continent, but they are causing lots of trouble, and they may be causing lots of trouble for decades to come.
The problem is that most of the Negroes could be Christian, also a lot of so-called French actually Negroes. So this is also a problem. It's quite a dangerous mixture. But anyway, Patrick, what is the situation in the land of Kabbalah Haaretz?
Terms of like what exactly do you mean in terms of like the COVID?
Everything.
Well, everything. It seems like now they're really pushing vehemently for passports and for people. They're encouraging like celebrities to encouraging for people to take the jab. And also, euphemistically, you may notice they're using the term jab instead of shots. They're trying to euphemistic. That's all what it is. They're trying to entice the American public to take the shot so they can get out there and socialize. They have, like, and to be quite honest with you, most Americans are kind of swallowing it. You can look at videos of this one particular YouTuber named FedEx Me Your Drugs. He goes around and he interviews people from city to city, asking them if they're going to get the jab or if they're going to get the COVID, if they're wearing the mask, and asking them how they feel about it. And most people are lining up and willing to get the COVID vaccination, including the many of healthcare workers as well, even though repeatedly, anecdotally, of course, I don't know any of the studies or research, but it's been shown that these people have had violent reactions to these COVID shots. Many such example, I believe a nurse took the shot and miscarried a child. And there was another nurse that had a violent reaction. And it seems like people are just lapping it up. They really don't really care about the COVID. And if you talk about the COVID and you're anti-vax, you're considered a Nazi or a right-winger.
So it's I know that they, well, we commented in the previous podcast with Brother Jim already that at least in Bulgaria they were covering that there are some conspiracy theories, right wing conspiracy theories or left wing, which it does better against the vaccines as a whole are totally harmless and things like that. Now, almost 3 months later, they started to admit, well, there are some reactions, but they haven't adjusted that. They're few and far between, and they're not very serious. But the people are dying from the vaccine.
And apparently also people think they just trust what scientists or doctors say wholeheartedly. They don't really do much research into any of the any of the side effects of the vaccine. They seem to value what scientists are kind of like the new priest in America. America doesn't really have a religion. It has scientists and it has doctors. So anybody with like an esteemed degree, the institutions like the colleges are considered temples where people go in and they get initiated. The initiatory rites gives them a piece of paper and therefore makes them an expert. And therefore, you got to listen to them 100%, even if they haven't shown any kind of validation. They don't care about validation. Total common sense is thrown out the window. And just trust science wholeheartedly and don't question anything about science because, well, science knows everything. Science is a religion. Science is the urbanite expression. You know, we're not going to trust religion. We're just going to completely trust science 100%. And that's why people just dive into any of these shots or whatever a doctor tells them.
So basically, the Gorma scared, and let's move with the next stage of the agenda.
Yeah, and social engineering.
What is going on political level?
Political level, it seems like they're rather quiet about the whole Iran situation and the whole foreign situation. And they have seemed to be kind of a blackout recently about what's going on politically in the United States. It seems to me like they're reshuffling. And what many of the former Trump supporters are doing now is it's blue anon. Now they're saying like trust the plan in terms of like the Democrats. So we're shifting from one conspiracy theory to another in terms of what is going on to domestically with American citizens.
Please just elaborate a bit more when you say blue anon.
Well, blue anon is kind of like the I guess it's a reshuffling that now. It's saying I don't know much about Blue Anon. I just think that it's sort of saying that there's like people from these, just like QAnon, they're saying there's people behind the scenes that are going to weed out corruption and going to help the American public. That the whole January 6th thing was kind of a setup, and these people are domestic terrorists or whatever, and we know what's best for you in terms of what politically.
And so what are people saying with regard to the presidential election? How many people believe the presidential election was rigged?
On the ground, most people believe it was rigged. And I personally
Good.
Think it was rigged personally myself. I don't, like I said in the other, I got criticized by some lady saying, you know, most Americans are idiots because we don't pay attention to electoral politics. I just to address that person, because I do read comments that are made towards me. I guess that was made towards me. I don't care about the electoral process. To me, both the sides are controlled, both the Democrats and both the Republicans. They're all controlled by lobbyists, NGOs, hedge fund managers. People that don't have any links to you or I on the ground level. So a lot of these people that decide things for us, we don't really control the electoral process. We don't even control the people we put in there. So, but yes, I will say I believe that the electoral election was probably rigged. It most certainly was. Now, what I've learned from all this is that there are many key operators. If you examine the situation, including maybe even Russians, I mean, who knows? But the key to that is that Russia is controlled as well. It's Red Zog. You know, it's you got Zog 1.0, Global Homo, and you got Zog 2.0, which is a more and Nord may disagree with this, but I think it's a more subtle type of control as opposed to America. America's too blatant and obvious that this is Globo Homo, and they're enforcing it. Russia may be a little bit more traditional and conservative in their presentation, at least on outer appearance. So I think that is what is pretty much American politics in a nutshell.
Are people outraged? by the open stealing of the election, even violating
I would say
even
boomers are.
the okay, the boomers are. So
Yeah, the
those are the
boomers and the
people of the
older group are.
are
I
these
think the millennials and the zoomers, I think, are indifferent to it.
do they are the younger people are the younger people already switched off and not that
Yes.
interested in the
Yes.
system?
Yes.
Do
Well,
they?
most of the younger people care about the internet or what's on the internet or TikTok.
Okay. And but are they totally apolitical and not racial? They don't care a fuck about anything in the
Well,
country,
it's
or
divided on that in terms of that. I'd
tell
say
me.
the millennials kind of skew, in my opinion, more towards the. And by the way, I'm stating my opinion, so don't come on the comment section and say, oh, yeah. I'm just stating my opinion and my observations in my community and people I interact with on a daily basis. And that's how I make my assertions. Maybe your experiences are different. But in terms of like the Zoomers, I'd say the Zoomers are either communist and utopianist and want to, want a multicultural world. Are they Nazis? There's like no in between.
Oh,
They don't they like
nice.
democracy. Neither one likes democracy.
We can live with that. We can live with that.
The
If
millennials are the older aging millennials are becoming more like boomers, I would say. They're becoming more complacent. But at the same time, they don't have quite the money that the boomers did, and they don't have the security that the boomers did. So they're always worrying about security. They're always worrying about that, and they are kind of more vested into alternate politics. But I would say they skew a little bit on the Bernie bro side, if I could say. Like most whites, I would say, kind of skew either between Bernie bro or conservatards or patriotards. They're more or less kind of that. If they're kind of extreme like us, well, they're in these circles.
now, how old are the Zoomers, their age range?
I'd say from high school graduates, probably from people in like their teenage years to high school graduates to 20s.
Okay. So the Zoomers are either communists or Nazis.
Yeah, I'd say from my broad spec,
Nice.
or they're gay.
Okay.
So communists, basically.
Yes,
Okay.
basically.
But
But they're
at
not the
least.
Stalinist variety of communists. They are like the global homo liberal tard variety of
So
communism.
they're classical Bolsheviks. They're gay
Yes.
communists. Okay.
But what excites me is that there's Nazis in there. That's
I will
what
tell you this,
matters.
though. I think they're indifferent to Jews and Israel, though. I think they don't really care about the Holocaust. They don't really care about Jews. This is not big on their spectrum. Now they lap it up and they believe it, but I don't think they care about it. They're not gonna like. Have you been watching those Omegle streams with people like Martinez and TJ and all those other people? That's kind of a good spectrum of how Zoomers are.
Okay.
In
Interesting.
my opinion.
I will add my 2 cents of information. In Bulgaria, after 2 days, we have elections. I cannot predict who I won't vote because I don't vote for communists, and they're all different types of communists.
Oh, wow.
But if you remember, Jan, we talked about that. Maybe years ago, that actually Bulgaria is still ruled by a crypto communist in one way or another. But the interesting thing is that Bulgaria, our great and glorious government and our intelligence service, actually caught six Bulgarian citizens, some of them Russians, but with Bulgarian citizenship. There were senior officials in the defense ministry and in the military intelligence that spied for Russia.
Oh, wow.
And they were leaking a lot of information for Bulgarian army, for the work of the Bulgarian military intelligence, for the American bases on the Bulgarian territory, for these war games. So basically, they were leaking information for at least 2-3 years, maybe more.
Very interesting.
And it looks like one was a former military attaché, and it was currently in charge of the classified information on the Bulgarian parliament. Another was a high-ranking military intelligence officer in the defense ministry. And he was supposedly he was the head of the spy network. The others were basically they were selling information for the Russian military, and of course, just saying that some of them were married for Russians, that could be Jews, just saying, and they were selling information to the Russians. And this was several days before the Russians actually moved a quite large military forces on the borders with Belarus and Ukraine, which may be coincidence, but still interesting thing is going on in Europe at that point. And of course in Bulgaria, full measures, they're scaring 24/7 the going masses with COVID. The people are dying. The last year at that period, Bulgaria was the last country that got the COVID pandemic, supposedly, and we had basically no cases, and they were wondering what is going on in Bulgaria. No one is dying or catching COVID, but now they were rigging all the numbers. Obviously, there is something. I never rejected the possibility that there is something. I told you that maybe eventually I had it. I'm obviously yes. Still alive. It was like a heart flu, and maybe there was some consequences after that. I'm not sure still. But overall, I think that the impact that this was the final goal, to destroy the entrepreneurs, to destroy the private business, small businesses, to establish a harsh control on the borders. So basically, this was one of the few good things about globalism, that people could travel like tourists. I'm not talking about invaders from Middle East and Africa. People could travel, people could visit different countries. Now, most likely, they will replace that with a strict border control, with vax passports. So this unknown force with Semitic origin that is ruling the world, they achieved
desert forces.
They're desert forces. Demon worshipping desert forces.
This Yahweh, sky incarnate demon. Demons from the desert. Desert demons.
So they achieved their goals for now. I wonder, because it looks like they, like all communists, they had a plan for the next decade. So if this decade started with this very strong for them, with this pandemic, how they will continue? Most likely they will continue with they will extend the COVID with miraculously will mutate, of course, with new waves of COVID. Then they will crash the economy in one way or another. The supposedly the strongest economy in the world, America, is already severely disrupted or destroyed. America is ruled by
also about America. Yeah, America is ruled by these same desert forces, which encompasses the entire globe and envelops them in their evil. But America in particular, yeah, you're right about there's a big financial bubble that's increasing, and it's starting to be filled in the real estate and various other different industries in America. And this bubble is just like it was in 2008, and it's larger than what it was in 2008. And it looks like it's going to pop.
You know, this fascinates me, Patrick. You mentioning the bubble of 2008. I was looking at old charts again of the South African economy going back 100 years. And even South Africa took a big beating from 2008, that bubble. And that bubble was going to, I keep telling people, that bubble was going to rip down the entire banking system of the world. And they managed to keep the bubble alive with that $700 billion that the American taxpayer had to pay to allow the rich to carry on fucking around the way that they've been doing. And those bubbles are so much bigger. And it fascinates me because I've been asking myself from an economic point of view, it's like you've got a bubble, and how do you keep the bubble alive? And the only way to keep the bubble alive is to put more money into the bubble. Yeah. The only problem is that in order to keep it alive, you have to start spending. You've got to spend enormous amounts of money. So, for example, they maybe used $700 billion in 2008. But look at how much money Trump has had to pump out. He pumped out like $9 trillion in a single year out of I think America's debt before then was already $20 trillion. And in 1 year, he pumped out $9 trillion. And I believe that Biden has already pumped out another $2 trillion or may pump out yet another $2 trillion. So what I'm saying is, you know, you're going from $700 billion to $9 trillion to keep the bubble alive, and it's only been 10 years. So if you do succeed in keeping the bubble alive, what will happen the next time the bubble, because the bubble is exponentially bigger. So what happens if the bubble starts wanting to burst in 10 years' time? Does that mean that in 10 years' time you'll need like $70 billion or $700 billion in order to keep it alive? The bubble needs to be allowed to collapse.
Are you familiar with Keynesian economics?
I know the term. I can't think. I know that it's more about government driving the economy or government spending.
Well, it's about expanding markets. It's about expanding markets. And theoretically, that's what capitalism is supposed to do. It's supposed to have these expanding markets. And that's how the money keeps sort of its value in America. Is it has all these different expanding markets and these resources to sort of tap into and these securities to tap into. And what happened in 2008 was they were actually fronting loans to people that had very bad credit and very bad. And by the way, they were mostly non-white.
Yes,
mostly non-white. They were floating fraudulent side of securities and backing these up by real estate and bad mortgage loans. And that's what caused the 2008 sort of crash. And what I meant by Keynesian economics is it has to have infinite markets to expand. Like it doesn't talk about finite growth. It talks about infinite growth. So that's the model they have for most of the economic systems in America.
But now this brings me to a question that I've been asking people in recent years. I've asked it of investment people that I know here in South Africa. And my question was, globalism and the expansion of globalism and global trade, doesn't that come to an end because the earth is finite and the population is finite?
And but the model doesn't. The model they're working on does not come up to an end because it assumes at the same time it'll be coupled with productivity and innovation.
But I can tell you that in South Africa, productivity is not going up, and
Neither is
innovation
America.
is not high on our list either. Hey? So for me, it was like in recent years, even before this COVID, it was as if the global expansion is starting to come to an end, and this thing is topping out, and that's it. And, you know, what now? And I can't see how you can keep markets up indefinitely. All that you are doing is you are allowing the rich to play all kinds of weird, wacky games.
Yes.
And whatever they do, they're never allowed, they never get punished. In the past, if you were rich and you screwed up, you lost your money and you were bankrupt. Now it's like if you're rich, you can never lose your money, and the government will always find a way to get the common taxpayer to pay to subsidize your failures. And so you can do anything the fuck you want. The super rich are driving me crazy.
And also, this allows them to alter the social scenery. Allows them to alter the social through their philanthropy. They can be as a philanthropic as possible without any consequences or repercussions on like the average lives of people, everyday people. That's why you see them being the main contributor and driver in these NGOs and these nonprofits that these hedge funds often cover for, push open borders, and they push for more egalitarian measures towards minorities, and they push for these beyond consequence. Same thing goes with the LGBT lobby that many of these wealthy people are pushing, and these corporations are pushing. And these are not even, many of these are not even money making they're not money making types of endeavors.
I'm with you. These NGOs and philanthropy has for decades been a way to hide what the rich, yes, the super rich are really up to, and I don't like any of that stuff.
Looking through the NGOs, I guarantee you, you follow the money trail on the NGOs, you'll discover really like who rules America and probably who rules the world. You'll discover. That's really what you want. You want to know the traders in any country? Look beyond the hedge funds, look beyond the NGOs, and you'll see fronts for all these egalitarian missions and these open border societies. Also, these various different think tanks that exist in America, primarily left wing, like the Council of Foreign Relations, and but there's also right wing too, like the Cato Institute. And these are all backed up by hedge funds and big money.
That's very interesting. These think tanks in America, those things also bug me a lot. In South Africa, we had lots of NGOs. NGOs just poured in. And all these NGOs were fucking liberal. And
they're all promoting queerness. Globalists, they're all promoting open borders, and none of them are promoting the preservation of European people.
Absolutely, absolutely. Everything globalist is non-white, and
yes,
you know who runs that.
Of absolutely. Course.
Yeah, very.
By the way, just someone sent me interesting news that actually Russia warned NATO not to send troops in Ukraine.
That's interesting.
They're massing troops on the borders with Ukraine, or I must say on the borders with these territories that de facto annexed by Russia, and they're part of the separatist movement or whatever. And
I wanted to ask you, because I only saw some news about Ukraine today, and I see that there seems to be quite hectic stuff going on there. Can you describe to us what's happening with Russia, and is it just Russia and Ukraine, or are there other countries involved? And what is your take on it? What do you think is happening?
So basically, from what I've read, a German guy sent me this just recently. It is said that the commie foreign minister Heiko Maas sent a message to his counterpart Dmytro Kuleba, which is the Ukrainian foreign minister, a message that the German forces or the German intelligence is monitoring the situation at the border between Ukraine and Russia. So they want to de-escalate the situation and not to threaten the ceasefire. Supposed ceasefire between Ukraine and the separatist forces. But everything that we're talking today is basically... So at one hand, we have the Bolshevik Jew-overs from Russia that I 100% don't agree that...
Red Zog.
Conservative. They are not conservative. They are just plain conservative. Yeah. And at the other hand, we have Eurofax that are totally disgusting. And from the third side, you have, of course, Ukraine, that is the president of Ukraine is Jewish. And of course, they're playing, at least in Ukraine, they had some kind of nationalism, but I'm not sure how many of the original nationalists that are really national socialists are genuine. And the other, you have Austin, which is the U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, I suppose. He wrote that they were backing up by the U.S. President Joe Biden. Well, big fucking deal. I mean, he in a phone call with the Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky, the fucking Jew, on Friday. So basically, everything seems like artificial crisis for me.
Can I address that real quick, Nord, about Biden? Now, the big thing going on in a lot of conservatard circles now, because I like to monitor all the people, not just my side, but one of the moderate sort of conservatard liberty types, they're trying to make the argument that the Ukrainian government and Biden were working together, and they've been working together for a while as some type of cover-up, some type of conspiracy. Biden was... working and align with the Ukraine, and they're trying to make this a big deal that they had some connection to Azov Battalion. I don't know what the truth of that is, but that's what a lot of people are trying to do, and that's what I predict is going to be.
I can give you a little bit of information. In the beginning of the crisis, that was 100% incinerated by the Russian special forces and the Russian intelligence. There were a lot of material back in time, and I'm kind of sorry that I didn't keep the folder of information, but the Ukrainian guys that I was in contact with, several nationalists, they provide a quite extensive information that this coup d'etat was planned years before 2014, years ago. These people that supposedly played like a separatist, they were training back in 2010 with the same separatist flags. They were there playing military games, things like that. And a lot of them had photos in Russia and talking with higher-ranking members of the Putinist regime, including visiting lectures of the bearded Eurasianists, as we know, Tavarish Dugin. Obviously, he was making lecture of the Russian world, Ruski Mir. This idea that every Russian must be part of this Russian world. So anyway, they created this thing in 2014, and of course the national reaction, if you are nationalist and you're part of this idea, is to organize and to help the government. The Ukrainian government was notoriously inefficient of dealing with the separatists. And of course, there were a lot of hidden informants in the Ukrainian government. There were a lot of Russian agents there. And the army was in a pathetic situation. Of course, traditional corruption and lack of good organization, lack of funds, things like that. But overall, the official standing army of the Ukraine was not able to deal with the separatists, even though they called them terrorists and terrorist activities, whatever. So the nationalists were the core of the forming of these volunteer battalions. And I knew guys that were in the Pravi sector, right sector, and I knew some guys that were in Azov battalion. And at that point, there were, Azov battalion was full of volunteers from all over the world, basically. Now, these guys were with, most of them with NS, National Socialist political views, some of them were, let's say, conservative political views, things like that. At the other hand, there were a lot of volunteers, some of them nationalists, some of them communists, which is also interesting, that volunteered to fight on the side of Russia, of the separatists. So this is also a thing. So these volunteer battalions, at some point, under the pressure, they proved themselves in battles. There were a lot of history there. Most likely, Russians sent a lot of professional soldiers to fight in eastern Ukraine. And these battalions and their commanders, it looks like they sold the battalions to the government. So these volunteer battalions, they still have Ukrainian members. Some of them still had National Socialist political views. But most of the foreign volunteers actually are out of the battalions. They are now officially elite guard units, so they're part of the standing army of Ukraine. They are supplied by heavy equipment by America. Americans didn't help Ukraine with heavy equipment before, I believe, 2017, so 3 years after the start of the conflict. They were not sending any kind of heavy equipment, with the exceptions of maybe military advisors. And it looks like they allowed the Russians to do their job in Ukraine, and their strategical goal was to destabilize Ukraine, to take Crimea, which is very important for the Russian Navy. And it looks like it's the first step of further invasion in Europe, because the naval base in Crimea could be used for invasion on the Balkans, of course, in Bulgaria. And for taking Bulgaria is basically, or Romania, the keys to invade Europe. So I
have a bunch of questions, if I may ask, just to make sure I understand the situation. The government in the Ukraine, is that government a nationalist government led by a Jew that engaged in a coup d'etat?
The okay, basically
Just
every
get a bit of history.
okay, these people are really populist. They're playing the game of nationalism, but I doubt that a Jew could be a nationalist in any country than Israel. So
Absolutely, definitely.
they're playing that there, and this is a thing with Azov Battalion. The leader of Azov Battalion actually started to soften the message. Before that, Azov Battalion still have the Black Sun, and Ulf Zangel rules like a symbol, but they started to soften the message because it looks like he engaged in the Ukrainian politics, and someone gave him advices, which I don't know who gave him advices. So I don't know. At one hand, I still sympathize to the guys that are the Ukrainian nationalist, and take in mind that a lot of Russians actually nationalists, national socialists, escaped Russia and they joined Azov Battalion. So basically, Russians are fighting against the Putinists.
So there are Russians who joined up with the Ukrainians.
Yes, a lot of them,
Interesting.
including Belarusians.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So can I just confirm, and these nationalists, did they take control of Ukraine by way of a coup d'etat?
I don't think that the Ukrainian nationalists took control over Ukraine. They still have ability to influence the politics sometimes directly. By there was years ago, for example, cases of Ukrainian nationalists beating deputies, attacking the deputies and throw them in trash cans and things like that. So there was a guy that was thrown in the trash container. The Ukrainian nationalists, it is very hard to understand what is the situation there, because some of the guys that I've knew, they died during the combat. They were also volunteers. With
Really?
some others, I've lost contact. And from the channel that I followed and still communicated with the guys, they were honestly, they are kind of demotivated from what they've saw, and they've saw that these people used the nationalists for obtaining their political basically to obtaining power, and they're serving to Global Homo, and to even they're selling the soldiers, the life of the Ukrainian soldiers, to the Russians, because there was a case of Jewish billionaire that is communicating with the Russians from the other side. This Jewish billionaire, he was playing a nationalist in the Ukrainian parliament. So and it was known that he was selling information, and nothing happened to this Jew. So what's the situation in Ukraine? Its situation in Ukraine is muddy, to say at least.
But Ukraine is a member of NATO and
It is allied to NATO, but I don't think that it's a NATO member.
it's allied to NATO.
Let's
Okay.
check NATO, Ukraine. Because I don't think it's a member of NATO. It's the first. Okay, so let's read NATO. A sovereign, independent, and stable Ukraine firmly committed to democracy. Oh my God. And the rule of law is the Kiev, is a Kiev Euro-Atlantic security. Oh, this is written by some. Since developed substantial of NATO partners since 2000 in the wake of Russia-Ukraine cooperation had been intensified in the critical areas. So basically, it's not a member of NATO, but it's partner of NATO, whatever this means. My suggestion is that there were hidden diplomatic relations between USA and Russia. They're playing. They had some secret agreements about Ukraine, and that's why America didn't send anything like heavy equipment. They were sending outdated Humvees to the Ukrainians. Meanwhile, the Russians were sending tanks and heavy artillery, rockets, and things like that in Ukraine. And the idea was that the theory was that in eastern Ukraine, these people that rebelled against the evil fascists in Kiev, these common people, these miners, they rebelled against the fascists, and they had some tanks on the side and some heavy equipment, and they somehow learned to drive these tanks and to operate with these heavy equipment, rockets, and so for a couple of days, and they turned against the Ukrainian army and they smashed the Ukrainian army. Obviously, Russia sent well-prepared troops there to operate and to attack Ukraine. I mean, this is quite obvious.
So now, if I may just ask a bit more, the separatists in the Ukraine are in the eastern section of Ukraine, at Donbas or something.
Yeah.
And they are actually, those are actually probably Russian troops, and Russia is behind that whole thing.
They're Russian troops and they're local volunteers that are pro-Bolshevik. When I say pro-Bolshevik, you must check out some of the early documentaries from this part of Donbass. They're parading with the USSR flags, with the portrait of Stalin and things like that. In Crimea, for example, Crimea is directly occupied by Russia. Directly. I mean, this is an open occupation. Putin, in 2014, he claimed that he don't know anything about this thing. And then they revealed at the end, because it was obvious that they sent a special forces. They occupied Ukraine. They occupied Ukraine because, not Ukraine directed, the Crimea. Because they needed this naval base, which, according to rumors that circulated in Bulgarian nationalist circles, this was the starting phase of the secret operations of the Russians called Gog and Magog. So make it from what you want, but obviously someone likes the Bible prophecies there.
Okay, I want to ask this, because Ukraine and Crimea and all those countries used to be part of the Soviet Union. Not so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is Russia now expanding into parts of the Soviet Union, trying to regain power in these places?
Yes, and take in mind that the Soviet Union in some places never stopped to exist. For example, Belarus, they're basically Soviet Union. Even their secret service is called KGB.
Wow.
They're using the symbols of KGB. So basically this guy, Lukashenko, He actually wants to see Soviet Union. He will rejoin Soviet Union, and they're very interesting stuff. And I cannot get what is the hidden the hidden game there. Maybe there is a secret agreement between the European faggots and the Russians. It looks like the Russians started to simulate from one side these protests against Lukashenko. And on the other hand, they are pretending that they are helping Lukashenko. On the other hand, the Europeans are stimulating these liberals against him. So maybe the both sides had interest this guy to be taken down. And this coincided with the Corona Morona outbreak. And he was a guy that was, he didn't believe in the corona and to close the country. So most likely if they take Belarus, if they take eastern part of Ukraine, or even, I don't think that they're ready to take whole Ukraine, because at that point they must meet forces of NATO and Russia. Russia is not ready for a larger conflict. They will wait until United States are totally destabilized. They know that they cannot win an open war against United States. They will wait until United States is totally destroyed by economic, racial, social pressure, whatever. And then they will attack. Then they will wait until NATO is destroyed, which technically is not a bad thing, but when you don't have any kind of other protection, it's kind of shit. And then they will attack.
I like a lot of your analyses. I think you're dead on. I think you're dead on. And it helps me to try and grasp exactly, you know, what you think, because I also don't see, you know, people talk about World War III. You got all these prophecy types, and they're all saying, "Oh, the world is going to be World War III. People are going to be nuking each other, etc." But you know, Nordlux, when I look at the way the world is going in European history. In European history, for hundreds of years, in the time of Christianity, in European history before the time of the French Revolution, you had a type of war that existed in Europe where basically you had governments or kings, and they had like a tiny professional army. And they got a tiny professional army, and they sort of fight with each other, but they don't really fight that intensely, and they maneuver around a lot, and they play games with their little armies, and so it goes on. And the wars were actually small wars done by professionals, and it wasn't the same as the French Revolution, wasn't the same as World War I, World War II, etc. But when I look at the world as it is now, any war that's going to break out now is not going to be a World War I, World War II, French Revolution type of situation. Everything seems to be everybody's playing games with these tiny little armies. And they shoot a couple of people here and they do a few things over there. But nobody in the greater power structures actually wants to blow up the whole world. No, the Russians with all their nukes, they're not going to fire those nukes. Neither are the Chinese, neither are the Americans. But they do go and play their games like they do in Syria, and the Russians and Americans eventually fight each other a little bit in Syria on a small scale. But nobody really gets down to really boogie and really fight, you know. To me, it's like the only time that war really was a nasty war was when there were real things on the line, like in the case of destroying the Germans. You know, the goal is to destroy German power at all costs, and the only reason it becomes a big war is because the Germans happen to be so good. But when I look at all these things, they're like they're piddling around, playing little games here, little games there, tiny wars here, tiny wars there. But nobody is going to do Operation Barbarossa or invasion of Poland or anything like that. It's just little games.
This is until they are preparing and they're coming a new generations of weapons, which, by the way, if it's true, I must say that we are not sure the prophecies, what exactly of the prophecy of your countryman von Rendsburg what. I assume that, let's say that that part could be true, that he predicted that the war will be in the sky and there will be new types of weapons that were unseen. And we are going in that direction because it looks like a lot of the superpowers had these kind of weapons. But also, you're right because they're on the same side. They're both on the same
Yes,
side.
yes. They're not out. If you look at World War II, the British, the Americans, the Russians were all on the same side against Germany. The only bad people are the Germans. Otherwise, everybody is helping each other out. But and the fact that Russia and America became these great enemies after World War II, they were enemies in name only, and they played games around the world, sponsoring third parties. But they're not going to get stuck into each other with tank battles and nukes. They don't. They've got too many other things and too many other friends in common. And I believe that Putin recently also said something like he was raised by his Jewish grandmother, I believe.
Yes, a nanny, Jewish nanny, I believe, or Jewish neighbors or something like that. But it is a known fact. I mean, his mother is called Shalomova, which come from Shalom, obviously. They tried to convince the people back in the time that it is not coming from Shalom, it's coming from Helm, basically. This Rus old Slavic word for Helm or whatever. But the problem is that I know old Bulgarian. And old Bulgarian is the basis of the modern Russian, and the word for helm is shlem, not shalom. So obviously, some kind of Jewish mind fuck there.
Oh, well said, well said. Absolutely, total mind fuck. That's the way the game is played. Nordlux, everywhere I look, anybody who's in power or getting very rich, there's always a Jewish link. There's always something there. It's like it cannot happen without some kind of Jewish link.
So yeah, I don't know, it's a very, very interesting situation right now in Europe. My suspicion is that the crisis in Ukraine won't develop, at least not in a type of open large-scale conflict. They will continue to pressure Ukraine. This is a game of nerves right now. The Russians are very good in these dirty games. They will, as I said, they will wait until United States is totally destroyed, which is not very far away, unfortunately or unfortunately. And maybe they will hope for escalation of the conflict in the Middle East, not in Europe, in the Middle East, where the possible places where the larger conflict will start, of course, Syria, maybe Iran. And now, when you said about Africa being invaded by new Muslim forces, this is also interesting place for larger scale conflict.
I think in Africa, controlling the conflict is going to be much harder, much harder. I think in the Middle East, it's much more under control, etc. But inside Africa itself, in its raw state, Africa's got so many problems, and the black governments themselves have got very, very weak control of their own people. And I think with time, this could get very interesting. I was reading where somebody was saying that this tiny war that's sitting in Mozambique could even spread into other parts of southern Africa. The physical war, in terms of distance from me, is far away. It's like well over 1,000 kilometers away. The continent is big, but it's very, very interesting. And it just represents, it means that like the blacks never really fought each other big time, but now they've got something new that can really cause problems.
I
And
was
this could be interesting, could be very interesting.
I was asking today, I believe, I thought about the rising numbers of the rising birth rates of Africa, and I thought obviously the Jews and their tools will use them against Europe. So what will trigger these masses to come to Europe? Obviously, they will try to make some kind of large-scale conflict that will spread these waves across the continent and to move these black masses to Europe. And of course, Europe is ruled by totally spineless pieces of shit. So, what will stop them?
You have nothing but contempt for the rulers of Europe, eh?
Absolutely.
Well, I must tell you, that's the way I look at much of the world, hey? When you say spineless pieces of shit, absolutely. Well, I will tell you that you see in Africa, you've got to understand that the situation in Africa is the black population is exploding through the roof. And I think they predict by the end of this century that there'll be something like 2 billion blacks in Africa. So they could, in theory, become more than the Chinese. And the Jews, no doubt, would like to use that and tap into it. But I'll tell you the problem. The problem that the blacks in Africa face, and this is why this doesn't faze me, is these blacks are not very good at feeding themselves. They're not very good at most things. They're not very good at feeding themselves. They're not looking after their economies. They are operating a lot like the way that you described the Russians. In other words, the only thing that is providing anything in Africa is the sale of raw materials, of the incredible riches of Africa: uranium, gold, platinum, chrome. There's oil in Africa, there's now gas in Africa, there's diamonds in Africa. And the only thing that drives a lot of these black economies is the sale of raw materials and nothing else. And the rest of the economy is just built around that. Now, in the time of colonial rule, when whites ran Africa, we made a lot of use of farming. Africa was a net food exporter, and but Africa nowadays is a net food importer, and it's getting worse and worse and worse, despite the fact that we have a fantastic climate and that it's actually very easy to grow food in Africa. The weirdness is that Africa can't feed itself. And so when I look at the situation, the blacks, we whites have got a low birth rate, which we need to fix seriously. But the black birth rate, blacks just don't care about the future. And so the interesting thing for the blacks is that their birth rate outstrips their ability to handle the economics. So what happens is that as time goes by, and this is true in South Africa as well, as time goes by, the standard of living drops because there are too many blacks being born and they cannot grow the economy to fall in line with that. Very different to the way the Germans were, very different to even the way the Vikings were. You know, whites could grow their economy with their people, but in Africa, that it doesn't work that way. So what you're going to see is that Africa is going to, the black population growth also becomes a dead weight. And last year, when this COVID shit came up, I was reading that they were saying that in Africa, they are expecting a third of all of Africa to lose its jobs. A third of African jobs across the continent will be lost. So you must know this is very bad stuff for, this is very bad stuff for Africa as a place to look after itself. Plus, you have other tensions in Africa that are building up between the blacks. In quite a number of places in Africa, you've got blacks of different tribes living in a country that was created with European borders, and those blacks are getting sick and tired of each other, and they're fighting each other. There are battles raging in parts of Central Africa that have been going on for years and years. And another thing about Africa is that when the blacks fight each other, they don't fight the European way. Europeans fight intensely and get the war over. Blacks don't do that. They can sit and murder each other for 20 years, 30 years. It has no time limit. So you've got all these kinds of festering wars that have taken place in Africa. Plus, I don't think you and I have ever discussed Africa's world war, that black Africans just over 20 years ago, 25 years ago, had the greatest conflict in the world since World War II took place in Africa 25 years ago. But you probably never saw a mention of it in the newspapers. 22 black African countries went to war in the Congo, and anything between 3 and 5 million people were killed. And you didn't even hear a peep about it. So all I want to say is that as the black population growth, it carries on exploding and tensions and other things come up. There's all kinds of weird shit that can come out of Africa, really weird shit on a big scale. You can have large numbers of people fleeing the continent in quantities much greater than you see now. You could see people starving to death and conflicts among blacks and entire countries falling apart. I actually believe that a number of countries in Africa are going to physically break up. They're going to balkanize and break up, and that includes South Africa. That is definitely the way this thing is going. Africa is very unstable, and it's going to get a lot worse, and it's going to become an enormous problem. Plus, nobody else has got any kind of real control and presence inside Africa. So to control Africa is nasty. It's not like the same as sending American military forces to the Middle East. And the Americans also have got a very strange attitude to Africa. The United States militarily has no interest in Africa. And they really, really do not want to get involved in Africa. Plus, Africa is enormous and bad infrastructure, very difficult to control.
I think that's an error on Europeans' part, actually.
An error on Europeans' part?
On Europeans and the greater European, I should say, diaspora's part of not having any interest in Africa.
It's crazy because Africa is unbelievably wealthy. Yes. It's got a wealth the size of which you cannot believe. Do you know Patrick, that South Africa alone, and South Africa's not even been exploring or looking for new minerals. In fact, in South Africa, a lot of mineral output has been reduced because the blacks are making it so difficult, okay? But do you know that in South Africa alone, we've got $53 trillion worth of minerals?
I didn't know that.
$53 trillion in just South Africa alone. And do you know that in the days when the Soviet Union was busy funding all the wars in Southern Africa, the Soviet Union was of the opinion that Southern Africa, meaning Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Angola, South Africa, etc., that Southern Africa is like the Middle East of minerals. We've got minerals in vast quantities that are very important, like the United States needs chrome for aircraft. There are only two places on Earth you can get chrome from: Russia and Zimbabwe. Those are the only two places where you can get chrome. And if you go even into the center of Africa, there's uranium, cobalt, all
Yeah.
kinds of stuff.
Coltan. Coltan as well.
Okay. And do you know in South Africa we got massive coal fields. The minerals, we've got iron, you name it, we've got it. And we've not even been exploring for new stuff. So I want to tell you that our race needs to take Africa seriously,
I agree.
because here is stuff, and it's concentrated in Africa south of the equator. There's massive potential here. Yeah, and it's in the hands of these people, you know?
We also
It's
need to take it away
crazy.
from China. We need to seriously consider taking portions of Africa away from China, because if Chinese develop this or harness this, then they could be a potential threat.
Well, the good news about China is that when it comes to Russia and China in Africa, the Russians have in many ways been more effective than the Chinese. The Chinese tried on many occasions to even build infrastructure for blacks, and it failed, and it failed. Do you know that in the time of the liberation wars, the Chinese decided to help the blacks become independent of the whites? So what they did was they built some railway lines. One of them was known as the Trans-Zambia Railway Line. It was from Zambia, which was north of Rhodesia, to the east coast of Africa. By the way, and that country, Tanzania, used to be German East Africa. It was one of Germany's biggest colonies, and the Chinese were operating there. So in this railway line that they built this railway line for the blacks so that the blacks would not have to use the railway lines controlled in the south by the whites. Do you know that those railway lines were so bad and they had so many problems running them and the trains and all that, that the blacks, for the most part, actually used the railway lines that came through Rhodesia and apartheid South Africa? Unfortunately, the whites were not in a position. The whites decided to rather trade with the blacks for the benefit of that. But the truth is that the Chinese built whole railway lines and fixed ports and things to try and make the blacks free of white rule or white control. And even then, it didn't really work well. It didn't work well. So
You know what comes to mind, Jan, is when that you ever seen that documentary, Empires of Dust?
yes, I started watching it, and I want to finish it. But yes, you're on exactly. That is how Africa really is. And I can't impress this enough upon you. And all these places that are the empires of dust, my friend, you just have to go back a few decades when whites were there. Those places were flourishing, man. You have no idea. These people are dying. They are dying on a continent that is so easy to live on. It's so easy. There's nothing easier. you, as Alex Linder always says, you've got two growing seasons. You know, Africa literally doesn't have a winter for all intents and purposes. It's not like Europe with its short summer, you know, it's nothing like that. So, yeah. But the bottom line is that I think that Africa can become an enormous global problem. And that now that there's no real European presence, Africa can go to fucking hell in a handbasket, and it'll affect everybody, and the blacks themselves, even the blacks in power, cannot control it. You may find this hard to believe, but the blacks themselves, the black elite, will lose control of their own people. I know this sounds impossible, but I'm telling you the reality. It's very weird. So I still think that crazy shit in Africa could be exploited in the future. That's what I'm saying. But you got to get active in Africa. And I hope the whites of South Africa will hang in there, because I still think there's opportunities.
Yeah.
That's just what I think. Actually, I may add, Patrick, have you ever read Might is Right?
Yes.
And right in the beginning of Might is Right, it starts with something like, if there are men with large estates and big amounts of gold who are not your friends, you know, there is opportunity there. And that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm kind of saying.
We got one particular friend that likes to rub their hands and has large estates and wants the gold.
And what?
They are not our friends.
And large noses.
Yes, and large noses. For sniffing the sand.
You're in top form.
But whatever, I mean, it is good that the Chinese don't have a stable hold on Africa, because Chinese quite powerful, or at least they look powerful at that moment, and these enormous resources of Africa could boost them even further, which is kind of scary possibility.
You know what I'm thinking about when I see large resources in Africa? I'm thinking about the potential that Europeans can develop that into flight, into space, into developing a space program which can finally put us in orbit, and so we can explore the galaxy. We can get off this planet.
Hey, we need to own the planet and the galaxy.
Yeah, well, both.
Absolutely. Those are my ideas of greater Europe.
I mean, that's what Faustian European man is set to forth to do, to explore, and to explore until there's nothing.
Let's say that we must concentrate of the present situation right now, which is
we have to have aspirations, though.
Which is we must work on the. On the present moment. The present moment demands the nationalistic, white nationalist and national socialist forces to start to build up connections, businesses, parallel societies, everything that could help us.
I like what you're saying, especially I like, first time I've heard parallel societies.
Yeah, parallel businesses.
I love it. I love it. Yes.
That goes along with secrecy. We have to network amongst each other and not alert our enemies.
Very true. Very true. You know what? The whole world is filled with secret societies, and the only people who don't have it is the white right.
We did. We had the VAM society. And we had various different secret societies, from the VAM to the Thule societies.
Ah, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. You'll have to tell me about that.
It was a tribunal system, which when people felt like the courts were not giving them justice, they went around and went to violators and tried them and even hung them. on their own secret code. They all met in a tree. They all met near a oak tree, and they all administered their justice there. Their secret symbol was a rope and a sword.
My goodness, was this an American? An American?
No, no. It was like this was the 14th. This was the 15th through 17th centuries in Germany.
Oh wow! Very interesting. Never knew this. Never knew this.
No, this is well. I believe that everywhere it was popular amongst a lot of European people at that point. This parallel system of giving justice to the people that are considered dangerous or out of touch or something like that. So this is a thing, but we also must build, let's say, connections, and including international connections. We are not our enemy is there working on large scale international level, and we are just not working and not cooperating with each other.
Well, exactly. I think that's the problem with a lot of white nationalists in America is they can't see beyond their own country. And I think they should see beyond their own country and work with anyone who is pro-white that wants to save the white race.
Is that so? Are many of them still American patriots? They don't see the bigger
picture. That's sort of died down, but they still have a certain amount of distrust of foreigners.
That's kind of silly because Europe to me is the other superpower. In fact, yeah. I see Europe as the biggest superpower. It's just not properly organized, that's all. But Europe before World War One, Europe dominated 2/3 of the Earth's surface, you know.
The other problem I see is that many Europeans don't understand American society. We are much more sporadic. We are actually much more, I would even argue, violent. And we are much more kind of volatile than most Europeans are. I would say our society is a lot different than European society. And they don't seem to understand a lot of that. And it's not clear cut, I could say. To put it in better terms, it's more chaotic. American society is more... I would liking it to more of like a trickster. You know, it's more of a kind of, it has more of the Loki spirit or the Dionysian spirit as opposed to the Apollonian spirit of the Europeans.
This is good, actually. Contrary to the most of the people that are worshipping the Apollonian spirit.
Yeah, it also has a Loki element as well. And if you know what about Loki, the deity, of course, it has like a certain spirit about it to where it is like a trickster. It is. That's because I believe the foundations of America are much different. It has that frontier spirit. It has sort of that chaotic and that unpredictable and even pragmatic spirit as opposed to the where you could form like any kind of identity out of it. It has more of a kind of amorphous component to it.
It is in America is indeed an interesting topic.
It's like the game of poker. I'd say it's more like the game of poker. America is. It's more like a trickster deity. It's more like poker. It's more like those kind of elements.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
I would say that Europe is lacking resources to become a superpower.
Now you're talking. Are you, when you say resources, do you mean physical resources?
Physical resources, yeah.
Now let me tell you something. I have a book on the collapse of empires, big thick book that was written on empires and their collapse and so forth. And it goes back to like the Spanish Empire and all that. And in this study of empires and, you know, who defeats whom, the conclusion of that book was that the places with physically big territories that have resources, those are the empires that defeat the other empires. And if you look at World War II, just look at all of Adolf Hitler's problems. Lack of oil, steel, everything is a resource issue. Whereas you get Canada, Russia, America with vast quantities of resources. But Europe is really a region that suffers from that problem. But Europe had a solution, and the solution was colonies. And if you even look into the early days of Hitler, the early days of the Nazi Party, they had this 25-point plan. I did only about one or two videos about it, and I never went to finish it. But in that 25-point plan, Hitler demanded that Germany get colonies. He saw colonies as a place to expand to. Even then, he was talking about expansion. And Europe has lost all its colonies and all its territories. And it puts it at a disadvantage compared to Russia and America and all those. Whereas it's got the human capital. It's got the people, the quality of people, the number of people. But its missing element is the raw materials.
Yeah, exactly. Because honestly, what is making the superpower? The superpower making the people and the resources, as you mentioned. Another thing is the geostrategical situation and positioning of Europe. Europe is between. It's in the middle of the world, technically between Africa, the Middle East, Russia from the other side, and the Far East, and from the West, the Americas. Another thing that I'm mentioning quite often is that for the white race, it's important not to lose North America. Because North America is basically like enormous, how to compare it, jet carrier that could control both the Western Atlantic and the Eastern Pacific. Or vice versa, I'm sorry, the Eastern, Eastern Atlantic and the Western Pacific. Yeah. So this is important because this is the control of the routes. This is the control of the resources. That's why the Brits are still holding the Gibraltar in the Mediterranean. Because they know that this is important for the Mediterranean Sea.
I'm with you. I totally agree regarding your views on North America. I don't want to see North America turning non-white.
Let me just interject on that real quick. The question is though, how does the white people gain repossession, I should say, of their country? Which I will argue, as much as I hold America in disdain for their cultural influences across the world, how do white people reclaim, and I don't want to sound like I'm seditious here, don't want the federales knocking on my door, so I say this with much caution. How does the white populace maintain control of America, but at the same time weaken its influence culturally in other parts of the world? That's quite the quandary and also the geopolitical influences, which often is detrimental and anti-white, promoting anti-white entertainment, promoting anti-white values, which are deleterious to the white race. How does one go about doing that? That is the tricky question that I think not many people have been able to answer. I mean, we know the obvious answer. But I don't want to say it, but, you know, what exactly can be said about that?
That is a very sophisticated question, Patrick. Really a deep question. My own thinking is that the only logical, the true logical thing to do is to win the culture war. That already the white right has got a lovely culture that has been created. It's a pro-German, pro-European, pro-Southern, even pro-South African type of culture. And it's the culture is the thing, the culture and the culture's values are the things that will propel other things. Once you can get enough people to agree on the basic facts and on what the problems are and what the solutions are, from there will come other things. But you need, and in fact, let me tell you the Chinese solution to this problem.
What?
In the Rhodesian War, the Russians sponsored one group of blacks, and the Chinese sponsored another group of blacks. The Russians focused and wanted the blacks to fight a conventional war. And that was their approach to the whole business. But the blacks who were under the Chinese influence, the Chinese told them to rather focus on politicizing the blacks. So the blacks who followed the Chinese model, they didn't spend as much time with military stuff. They actually spent much more time with their own people, politicizing them, propagandizing them, working on their values. And by the way, when communism is busy teaching its values, even though they talk about democracy and freedom, they don't really care for either of those things. And if you differ with them, they will cut you up or kill you outright or torture you. They will beat you or torture you until you agree with their values. That is how it really works. So anyway, that is what the Chinese influenced blacks did. And in the end, as the war developed, those guys were much more successful against the whites than the ones who were influenced and guided by the Russians. They focused on getting their people together and turning them against the whites at all costs, and actually politicizing their entire society. Because you must understand that those blacks in the 1950s and 60s, those blacks were in many ways almost like the way whites are today, in the sense that they did not understand the forces behind politics, and they did not take part in politics because whites were in charge of everything. So they came and they talked their communist shit. They came and said, oh, well, when you get rid of the whites, we'll have communism and you'll be equal and this will happen and that will happen. And it doesn't matter that the facts that they taught them were mostly junk.
Yeah.
But the fact is that the blacks came to believe that. And the blacks came to believe, yes, I'm equal. I want equality. I want this. I want that. And once they are aware of that, then they want it. And in our race, a nice thing about our race, sometimes Alex Linder says this is bad about our race, but I also see it as a strong point of our race, in that we are a people who take words seriously. So the time when that's a problem is if you are dealing with Jews who are lying, which is the kind of situation Alex is pointing to. But the positive side of that is that we take words seriously and literally. And so if we come to believe things, then we will naturally aspire to those things and want to see those things move forward. So I believe that winning the culture war, and as we were talking about like parallel societies and things, we need to understand that when it comes to like liberalism and globalism and Jews and multiculturalism, that what we've got already in terms of a culture on in, let's say, the alt-right for purposes of this discussion, that this culture that we've got to keep it alive and we've got to keep expanding it, and it must also be uncompromising. Yes. In other words, we mustn't go, oh, no, we need to go and deal with the liberals and meet them halfway. No.
The problem with that is there is too much compromising in this culture. There's too much compromising of values where people are willing to let in half-Jews and Mischlings and mixed-race people and all these other groups that cause confusion in our midst.
Totally. You know, totally. Patrick, I'm 100% with you. You've got to have standards. You've got to go back to apartheid, you know, South African apartheid, where under apartheid, you were classified by race. End of story. You were either white or you were black or you were Indian, and that's it, you know?
But by the way, Jan, that's a problem in America, is there's way too many people that will compromise on this, and there's way too many Jews that are hiding amongst white nationalist circles, and even non-whites that are hiding in white nationalist circles, and too friendly and accommodating to many of these groups. They need to know, many of these groups that are amongst these white nationalists, they need to know exactly where white nationalists stand, and this causes, I think, confusion. This, like, interferes with, are you familiar with the jurist, National Socialist jurist, Carl Schmitt?
No. No, never heard of it.
Well, I recommend you look into some of Carl Schmitt's writing, where he talks about the friend-enemy distinction, that you need to have a clear-cut friend-enemy distinction, and it has to be antagonistic, that people see clearly who their enemies and who their friends are.
That sounds really good. However, I do have something for you that I think will help to assist in solving the problem. One of the things that you people still have to go through is, at this point in time, despite the problems that you've got, life is still way too good.
Yeah.
And so I will tell you what does happen when things go to hell in a handbasket. As time goes by, because make no mistake, we in Southern Africa, we've also tried all these different things. We've done all these things to death. We've met the blacks halfway, two-thirds of the way, three-quarters of the way, one-quarter of the way. We've done all these things. And I will tell you that in the end, these things don't work. What actually does happen is that all people, and this includes the Jews, even the Jews hiding among the whites, is that there are definite racial differences, but mental differences. And these differences, these are situational differences and mental differences. And as times get harder, basically in good times, everybody's your buddy and everyone wants to be on your side. But you will find that Jews and others become fair weather friends. And the moment things start really getting harder, you'll start seeing a lot of these people starting to have to make decisions themselves. And when times are really nasty, the only, like, in as your society, let's say, becomes more anti-white, as time goes by, that alone will filter out all the weaklings and all the others hiding in your midst. And as it gets tougher, they will leave, and they will flip onto other sides. So a lot of that will solve itself. Here in South Africa, for example, on the white right that we've got, you know, those are people who've been beaten, and you know, they've really had to hang in there. And eventually all these others will disappear. And you will find that when the going is really hard, that the whites who are then still game for it, they are the genuine ones. All the others will fuck off before that. So that's also another example of worse will lead to better things. Let the hardships come. The hardships will do all kinds of weird things. It'll sort out many different things. And so, you know, we aren't pressed to the point of having an existential problem yet. And so we haven't had to go through some of the stuff that the Germans and others have gone through. But also from Southern Africa, I will tell you another thing, is that we have integrated with the others, and we have had to deal with them in every conceivable way. And I will tell you that the other good news is that eventually you'll grow tired of them too. There are very few people who will actually want to stay in those other cultures and groups. Eventually, you will long for something where you truly belong. So ultimately, I say race will triumph. A race will come out. You can put it together and you can strike deals and things. We've been doing it to death in politics in South Africa. We've been doing it to death for more than 30 years, hey? And I want to tell you, it doesn't really fly. And there's another thing as well. Even when you bring everybody together, you have a very kind of a mediocre kind of setup where nobody is really that keen. You have a very compromised setup where everybody just pays lip service to it, but nobody is really totally driven to the point of risking your life. But when it comes to racial stuff, there the situation is different. And there you will, if that is the place where you can be a real extremist. So in other words, when you bring everybody together into one group, then you've got a very soft, moderate, weak, pathetic kind of organization and society. And the question is, who's going to fight for that society? And actually not many are. But when you get the racial thing coming together, it may be smaller, but there's a lot more intensity to it. And that is its big strength. So those are some ideas on what will come. That it's by no means that there's no hope. What we need is more weirdness and problems. I'm a total accelerationist. Total.
Nice.
I reckon the more you fuck up the system, the more wonderful it will be. I believe that I can't wait for things to get worse and for things to get a lot worse even faster. It will clear people's minds. It will definitely clear people's minds. Whites everywhere, and that includes even large segments of the white population of South Africa, are having it too easy. But our European background, is a background from people who've survived under very difficult conditions. And Europe itself is a very competitive piece of terrain. Our tribal system in Europe, which became a national system, that system is very competitive. And the one benefit out of all of those wars and struggles is that European people are extremely competitive, and our systems in their natural form are very tough systems, actually. Nationalism, when it meant something, was a system for real strength. Whereas when I look at the current system is so weak. It's so weak that the slightest little thing upsets it. Oh, you know, you aren't tolerant of transgender. You aren't tolerant of this. Somebody said that. Therefore, it's a hate crime. Therefore, they must go to jail. The current system is so weak. I see it as like a house of cards. This thing, if it's given some serious shocks, it'll fall apart. And Our natural system is a much tougher system. And if you look at what Hitler was doing the Roman Empire. We were going back to ancient times. We were going back to pagan times. It's a much rougher system. In fact, I have a very interesting military chart that I want to put in a video that I want to show you all. And when you see that chart, it's a chart that proves that the white male has never been softer and weaker and more pathetic than he is now. And I can show you the statistics. It's going to shock you. I'm going to make a note of it. It's something that I think you guys will really appreciate. We are from a stronger system. That's
Absolutely.
us. And everything, all this other stuff's freaking us out. And I also think that when we return to that tougher system, that you'll suddenly see lots of problems that we've had will solve themselves. Like, I think
Like
even
the
the
women
problems,
problem. I think the women problem will
yes,
solve itself, yes.
absolutely, absolutely.
Because that's why a lot of white women are probably rejecting white men now, is because white men are in an unnatural state.
And white men are weak, and white
Yeah.
men appear weak,
Yeah.
and white men are stopped from doing what they would naturally do, whereas blacks are portrayed as being
Yeah.
strong. And the women in their natural element want strong men.
Yes.
And we are animals at the end of the day, and men want certain things, and women want certain things. And let that natural animal stuff work. It works very well. It's worked for us in the past. We have never had, I don't think in our history we've ever had a problem of breeding. We've never had too few children. That is something totally new that's only happened since World War II.
I believe that there are a lot of artificial problems and poisoning of the white men, especially of the white men. And
Totally.
there are a lot of things that could be done, but also we must look at our strongest weapon, which is the science and intellect at that point, which
Totally.
I will sound a little bit like transhumanism, but when you have artificial intervention in the natural, how to say, in the natural selection of the white race, when you have an unnatural, in a natural, unnatural societies, you must find a way to balance it in an unnatural way, at least in the beginning. Then the nature will take its course, so to say. But we must, first of all, we must take the power and the resources. Everything is about the power, resources, and people that are able to rule the resources in the right direction.
Absolutely, absolutely. The more I think about it, I think in terms of Ben Carson, the Church of Creativity, the
Yeah.
White Man's Bible, we need to bring that thing together. And I think that we have a historical role to play. I absolutely believe it. Last year, before I had my other problems, I was studying Professor Quigley in America, and I want to do videos specifically about Quigley and what he said about civilization. And I think I can see some of the errors of Quigley's thinking, but there are things that Quigley did that were very interesting and that is very useful. And in part, he was talking about civilization, and that civilization develops through what you could call a threat and a response to a threat. And our movement is really a response to a threat. The
Yes.
threat being this Jewish liberalism and globalism, and we are the answer to that. It's the same way that Hitler was the solution to Jewish Bolshevism. It's all a repeat of that stuff. The difference is we must keep that thing alive, at all costs, no matter what. And from that thing, that response can itself become a huge, powerful force. And that's why they're trying to kill our movement, because they know that our movement is the counter response to them. And that's also why we mustn't compromise, because to compromise is to do the wrong thing. We need to push them back. That is the correct response, is to create the thing that as much as they try to beat it down, they can't. That's the secret. And that's what Hitler was doing. Hitler was exceptionally successful at that.
I must say that you know my opinion about National Socialism. That is the only working system, actually, for the white race. And we're talking about a white race, but you know that...
European race.
European race, but we were all over the world. It was not only Europe. We were in Asia, we were in the Middle East, we were in Africa, obviously, in America, so. South America, of course. So from that point, we must... you mentioned the Romans, but the Germans actually were doing something different than the Romans. They were creating an ethnic empire contrary to the multicultural empire of the Romans, which was a big mistake for them. Let's put it that way. I know that Alex Linde is quite big on the pro-Roman stuff, but let's be honest.
I am.
I know, but let's be honest, their model is basically the globalistic model of today. We must look at what is the situation right now, and the situation right now is that we need racial states, and we need resources. And the resources are in Africa. this is what it is. So, I cannot continue with my thoughts because European Union and things like that, but...
There's going to be a lot of arrests that are going to take place if we talk further.
But we must
stick together. That's what we must do. Stick together. Race is everything.
But yeah, this is the situation with Europe resources in the present situation. Any final words? Because we
before we go into that, I wanted to circle back to the initial topic about white male virility. I wanted to say that, are you familiar with this recent book that came out about how they were talking about environmental plastics and environmental causes of the fertility rate of not only white men, but white women being decreasing? They were saying that a white male, comparatively in the modern era, his sperm is weaker than that of a white man, even in the 1940s. And this was in America. Same thing adversely as to a white woman of childbearing age, from 15 to down onto in the 30s. They're saying that all comparatively, her grandmother had a much higher fertility rate.
I am aware, and I did publish stuff about the tremendous drop in the fertility rates. I actually published something several weeks ago, and the fertility rates are down even from the 1970s and 1980s to now. It's absolutely horrific how the fertility rate is dropping and the sperm levels of the men are dropping. It's very bad. And I'm always wary of environmental explanations.
Plastics. They were saying plastics had a big part of it.
Do they have any proof? because
yeah, they you'd have to read the book. I didn't go thoroughly into the book, but they were citing that in environmental factors like plastics and just social factors as well may be contributing.
I also think that the males are not the men of today. None of us are the kind of manly men that right. existed even a few decades ago. I think that our sedate lifestyle and our lifestyle has fucked us up. And that is also a reason, and that's where I agree with Nordlax. National socialism is the only practical, realistic, and workable way of living. We need to return to all that thinking. Not just the political organization, but every aspect of it, because it's all healthy. It will make us physically healthy, and it'll bring about the natural things that we need, definitely. So if there is like some other additional stuff, but I also think that you've got to look at just the way that we are, that we become very sedate, very weak, very pathetic. And that it's got to have a physical outcome. Maybe there's multiple causes, but it is a thing that needs to be counted, like seriously.
So, yeah, but one of the things that we must deal with, obviously the low birth rates, but. Another thing is the quality of the people that are born are quite low.
We need eugenics.
Eugenics, yeah. This is what I think.
I'm sure there are lovely solutions to the problems. Science is so advanced that I'm certain.
Positive eugenics, by the way.
Yes, I'm certain that with a little bit of thought, a little bit of discipline, we can turn a lot of things around big time. I have no doubt about it.
I think that every outcome from eugenics could be positive. I must tell you something. I was watching these guys that were streaming, and the younger generation, I don't know from where these people were, if people is the correct word, but you can barely see what is the sex of the people and what is their race and what is their mental state. The mental state is quite obvious. They're demented. They're totally crazy and totally retarded, most of them. But the question is, if the present generation is like that, what will happen after one more generation?
Well, I will tell you that, interestingly enough, I've been watching the blacks here in South Africa and in Southern Africa. And the good news for you is that the blacks also...
They're turning also, gay.
You know what? We've created what I would call black Englishmen. And these black Englishmen are very weak... They are very weak, and this is also in a twisted way. This is also why blacks flee Africa, because because they can only function in a first world or semi first world state. If things go worse for them, they can't handle that. So when their stuff goes wrong, they themselves cannot function in the problem area that they've created. Now, whites are the opposite. Whites, and I'm telling you now, you will see it with the Germans in World War II, but you'll see it even with the whites in modern times. You will even see it among your own people as time goes by, or you will have seen it in the internet age. Whites, when things go wrong for them, they actually can sit and try and start solving problems. And I will tell you, from when I was a kid, my man, whites are at their best when things go wrong. And whites, the best part of whites comes out then. And the more things collapse, like even here in South Africa, as things collapse and so forth, time and again, 99 times out of 100, if not 100 times out of 100, whenever things go wrong in South Africa, the people who come to fix it are whites. I'm not joking with you. Right now, even right now, when the electricity is collapsing, when this thing is not working, when that thing doesn't work, everywhere the people who come in to fix it are the whites. When I was in banking, when our biggest computer systems would collapse, and then we're in a department of more than 100 people, who comes in to fix the things? You see a couple of white guys in their 40s walk in through the door, and they go bing bang boom, and next thing you know, everything's working again. That's how it really works. That's why accelerationism rocks. Let everything fall apart. It's going to be fantastic. I'm telling you, you're going to see so many things. The more things break, the more helpless our enemies are. But the more things break, the better it is for us. We can, and that's why we mustn't be negative about when they try to ban us and break us and this and that, because we just need to learn how to survive that. And when we develop the techniques to survive that, which we already have been developing, look at the websites that people are putting up, despite being thrown off Twitter and YouTube and all that, all kinds of new websites are popping up. It's maybe slowing us down, but it's not stopping us. And as we overcome it, I mean, as much as they've been trying to ban BitChute, they've not been able to do to BitChute what they did on YouTube. And I will predict that every single new site that comes up will be tougher and tougher to break down. So eventually we're going to hit an equilibrium where we're no longer retreating. I don't think it's that far away. So I'm a total believer that chaos will work for whites. Absolutely. Absolutely. The more things break down, and you'll see liberals can't handle it. The black Englishman can't handle it. And those people who sniff in the sand, they also can't handle it. All of them, they need to function. They need to function in a first world country. Go and look at how many of them have been, how many of the sniffers have been leaving South Africa. Their population has dropped by more than 50% in like 15 years. More than half of them have left this country already.
They're leaving Ameriquois too.
Yes. Yeah. Huh. So I reckon worse is better.
I'm like you, Jan. I can't wait.
Just let them break everything.
I'm white-pilled about acceleration. I'm white-pilled about things just breaking down for them.
Let everything break down, because, you know, look at even the things that they did on the social media with Trump, for example. When they banned Trump, I read that the social media, Facebook and Twitter, that between them they lost something like $50 billion in capitalization. It doesn't mean that they physically lost $50 billion, but it goes to show that many of these things that they're doing is also backfiring on them. I was looking at YouTube. YouTube is totally anti-German. The latest YouTube videos, I'm seeing all these people are faces for corporates, and I'm getting more and more disgusted with the quality of the historical videos on YouTube. They are busy killing YouTube. And look at how we're still pumping out videos, and we just need to find more platforms and create more platforms. We'll be fine.
Telegram is starting to get like capabilities to broadcast.
Is that so? Is that so? So Telegram is got lots of potential.
if they don't block Telegram because
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about the merger they had with Dubai, but the guy who owns it said he's not going to block. He didn't let Apple when the government was trying to get him to reveal the things about Telegram, people's identity, and see that he didn't do it. He didn't cave.
That's good. Look, I think that there's a let's call it a market for our stuff, and I want to still see how other things like Parler and MeWe and all these others. I've even joined Minds a little bit. Gab is pretty good,
I don't know about
so
Parler. I heard that was a honeypot.
it's well. Let's see what things there are, and maybe there are also things we can create. That's the other thing to keep in mind, is that there are things we can still create. I myself have been looking at some of the technology that maybe I'd like to tap into in the future. I've also been having a few thoughts of my own. So, the main thing is the more people we can red pill, and also once people are red pilled, they don't go back to what they were. And that's the good news from
Another
what
thing,
I
Jan, I
can hear.
believe we can make our own sort of networks off something called, I think, LoRa or something. We can make like home networks, even, where they can't ban us.
That I'd like to hear more
Our own little
about.
internet system.
I like these kinds of thoughts. We need to talk about some of these things because I
Agreed.
too have been thinking. I've also been thinking like where our biggest weakness is, like with the social media, our weakness is the company itself. So the company that controls the software can then ban you. So that's where I've been sitting and thinking of ways of going beyond that on other, on let's call it on other hardware. I've been sitting and thinking of things that we can do that can also break us away from companies and things where they currently have a monopoly, but what if we did our own thing? Something we need in our movement is more and more technically skilled people
Yes.
because we can create and invent all the things that we need. And there is already a lot of stuff that we can grab onto already. There's a lot already. Take, for example, Alex Linder's Pivotal. Pivotal itself is a Twitter type of thing, but it's based on software that's free. And there's tons of that kind of stuff. I don't know if you know, but there is software that's the same that operates the same as Facebook and all those things. It already exists. It's our only problem is just gathering enough people together to support something. That's all. We just need to bring more and more people together, and then we can run our own stuff, and others won't even know. And you can, there's so much software that's already been created, and so much technology that I see from my perspective as a computer programmer that we've not even tapped into. Do you know there was a guy who once wrote me a message, and I'm very sorry that I didn't take him up on the offer. It was a white guy in Europe who was a computer programmer, and he told me of an idea that he had for phones. He had an idea for how we could use phones in a way that nobody would know and that it would work just for us. He told me of some capabilities and he said that it would require quite a lot of work, but if it was really necessary, he would do it. And when I thought about it later, years afterwards, a year or two afterwards, I started thinking, that man was onto something. And one day we may discuss certain of these ideas. What we just need to do is be able to function without them harassing us too much, etc. Get them more and more off our backs. And in actual fact, in many ways, the less they know, the better. Then,
Absolutely. Secrecy.
yeah, we just carry on doing our thing. But I think lots of whites, you do need publicity, but you do also need secrecy. And maybe we will have to experiment with the balance between those two things. But yeah.
Stay away from journalists.
Absolutely. Stay away from anything liberal. The less they know, the fucking better. And that's that. And don't worry about their publicity. Their publicity is poisonous anyway. What's important is our publicity to our people, to our audiences. That's all that matters. And off we go. So, yeah, we've had quite a long discussion. Maybe maybe we've gone a bit overboard now.
Yeah.
So, with that being said, we can continue the discussion next week, if there is a possibility, of course.
Most definitely.
Thanks, Norden. Thanks, Jan, for bringing me on. Appreciate it.
So, hail victory.
Hail victory.
Hail victory. And fantastic discussion. Thanks, guys.
These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.